Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee Chair Andy Harris, who joins us to discuss debt ceiling legislation and the appropriations process. But first, here's this week's headlines. Members of the House Ag Committee heard from producers across the country about the language they want to see in the upcoming Farm Bill. House Ag convened a listening session Monday in Florida before a lengthy two-part hearing on Capitol Hill Wednesday. Farm groups pressed for a wide variety of tweaks, and while there was no clear consensus across the spectrum of commodity groups, there was plenty of support for an improved safety net. Meanwhile, negotiations to raise the nation's debt ceiling are poised to have major implications for the next Farm Bill. House Ag Committee Chairman Glenn G.T. Thompson indicated this week he may try to tighten Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program eligibility rules through the Farm Bill if Republicans can't address the work requirement issue in a debt limit deal with President Joe Biden. Democrats have indicated they will not accept cuts to the program, and Senate Ag Chair Debbie Stabenow says she wants SNAP policies to be debated in the Farm Bill, not the debt ceiling talks. But the biggest news of the week was on the floor of the House of Representatives, where Speaker Kevin McCarthy's debt ceiling bill passed Wednesday night. The bill originally included language to strip certain biofuel industry tax credits, but those provisions were removed to address the concerns of several Midwest lawmakers. The bill formalizes an opening offer from House Republicans in negotiations with the White House and Senate Democrats, so changes are certain to come before an agreement can be reached. The bill's work requirement language and stripping of Inflation Reduction Act clauses could be the first things Democratic leaders will want on the chopping block. So we asked House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee Chair Andy Harris, why start negotiations with this kind of offer?
Well, the first thing is, of course, the president has said he's not willing to negotiate until we show what our proposal would be. I think that's not a reasonable position, but that's the position he took. So we gave him our negotiating position. Now he has no excuse not to negotiate. Hopefully he comes to the table and negotiates in good faith, realizing that in fact, as many members, even during the debate on the floor yesterday, said, well, no, pass the clean debt ceiling and trust us, we can negotiate spending issues. Well, let's just accelerate that. Let's just do them both together at the same time. Hopefully, a majority agree that this is what we have to do.
Should Americans be worried about a default?
I don't think at all. I think, honestly, to be honest with you, we believe the Treasury Secretary has the ability to prioritize American sovereign debt payments. That's really what a default is. You know, if somebody's a little late on paying a contract, we don't think that's the debt referred to in the Constitution. So we think that the Treasury Secretary has all the tools. We have plenty of revenue to pay, for instance, all our sovereign debt, to pay Medicare, to pay Social Security, to pay our men and women in uniform. Other things are effectively, we're borrowing money to do. So I think the Treasury Secretary could do it without. I think it's a threat that really isn't there. The Treasury Secretary has the ability to prioritize.
From a work requirement standpoint, obviously language in the bill that the House passed this week on that subject, do you ultimately see this being addressed through debt ceiling negotiations or perhaps the upcoming Farm Bill?
I think since the work requirements are not only for the SNAP program, they also cover Medicaid, they also cover TANF, the Temporary Aid to Needy Families, I think the most appropriate place to do it is now in the debt ceiling. I think as a country, the vast majority of Americans agree, look, we have a safety net. If, you know, God forbid you need to be in it, you need to be in it. But if you're an able-bodied person without dependents, without a disability, you actually should be training for a job or looking for a job or being on a job.
A number of people, including, you know, Chairman Thompson of the Ag Committee, have also pointed out work requirements already exist in these programs. There's already text there. Why go this step further?
In the SNAP program, for instance, the waiver process is way too lenient. Many states that really don't deserve a waiver for those work requirements have requested them and have been issued. So we have to tighten up. We again, these requirements are mostly based on unemployment rates in states. We are at record low unemployment rates in the country. There is no state in the union that should be getting a waiver from a work requirement on SNAP, but they are. So we have to tighten up the requirements.
We'll be right back with more from Chairman Harris right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Welcome back. As the chairman of the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee, Maryland Republican Andy Harris has a good deal of influence over USDA's budget, and he wants to make sure the department can function at a high level.
The top priority is really to preserve, since the USDA deals in a lot of places, these are Republican rural areas, most rural areas in the United States, most agriculture areas are Republican areas. We're going to attempt to preserve as much funding as possible. We think there are sources of monies that we can tap into that would allow us to maintain the core functions of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, protect our farmers, to protect our ranchers, protect our meat and poultry producers. We think there's enough there, and that's my goal, is to make sure that the core functions of the USDA are there to preserve American producers.
I want to go back to a hearing that the subcommittee had with Secretary Vilsack, and you had what I would generously describe as a very lively conversation with him over the Commodity Credit Corporation and the authorities within the Department of Agriculture. And you had mentioned the possibility of considering whether or not the appropriations process could be used to restrict CCC authority. What should we be watching for in terms of your approach there?
My intention is to roll that back, to return the Commodity Credit Corporation to its core function. Core functions, I should say, which are, you know, the crop insurance subsidies, make sure that if we have emergencies that we have the ability to pay our producers for losses they incur. In the case of poultry producers, for instance, avian flu, we're able to make our producers whole with that. That's the purpose of the Commodity Credit Corp, and that's what we have to return it to.
So then these organizations that have signed on in this Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program, mm-hmm. which is where so much of the CCC concern originates, should those organizations be concerned about receiving the funding that was announced as part of those contracts if that authority is ultimately restricted?
Well, look, if those funds are obligated, those funds are obligated already. If they're unobligated, yeah, they might be retracted, but I suspect a lot of those funds are obligated. If they're not, I would urge the Secretary to do what the Secretary should do, is come to Congress to authorize that program, to come to Congress and say, look, this is the program we need, this is the amount of money we think needs to be authorized to run that program. That's the appropriate way to do it, not misuse the Commodity Credit Corporation. That wasn't the purpose of it. And again, God forbid we get into big emergencies with regards to producer losses. That's what we should be using that for.
I want to wrap up talking about the Farm Bill, because we're seeing a number of folks look at the idea of potentially increasing that baseline, putting more money into the Farm Bill to fund things like increased commodity programs, ag research, trade promotion, things of that nature. You're an appropriator. Is that a realistic request, a bigger Farm Bill baseline?
Look, the Farm Bill, again, the Farm Bill authorizes the programs every year. The Appropriations Committee meets every year. We have to look at the current fiscal environment in the country and make a decision about how much of that authorization we can afford to spend. So, look, I think agriculture research is very important. I would urge the Farm Bill to include an increased authorization. That doesn't necessarily mean that fully authorized amount is going to be appropriated every year. It'll depend upon fiscal conditions. It'll depend upon, you know, how the Secretary is using the funds. Again, this Secretary, I think, has, especially with Commodity Credit Corp, has misused authority, and we have to pull back some of that authority back into Congress where it belongs.
But then looking at some of the very, the broad priorities that groups have submitted at this point, increases in reference prices on commodity programs. We talked about ag research, nutrition, obviously such a big part of the Farm Bill. Are you suggesting that the cuts and the increases that folks are pursuing need to come from within the bill itself? You're just not seeing the possibility for additional money?
No, there could be monies coming from for instance, from the Inflation Reduction Act, the so-called Inflation Reduction Act. Some of those monies could be used, rescinded and brought into the Farm Bill to pay for some of these things, because these programs are important. Research programs are important, crop insurance support. We have many important things in the Agriculture Appropriations Bill. But again, the Farm Bill is where we set the priorities, but every year the Appropriations Committee meets to determine how much of these we can afford. These are very valuable programs. The USDA, you know, it's a perfect example. The USDA yesterday, I think, misused their communications department to attack Republicans by name on the USDA website. Well, I got to tell you, that's not an appropriate use of USDA money. That USDA money would be better spent supporting our farmers and producers than going after a political agenda at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. We just can't spend money that way. We have to be smart and support our producers. That's the purpose of the Farm Bill, not a political agenda.
Chairman Harris, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back to hear from this week's panel, but first, our Andrew Hunneke introduces you to a lawmaker sure to influence the next Farm Bill.
Congresswoman Nikki Budzinski represents Illinois' 13th District. The freshman Democrat is among the new members of the House Ag and Veteran Affairs Committees. In the upcoming Farm Bill, Representative Budzinski says protecting crop insurance will be a priority for her and Illinois producers.
I think we need to figure out ways to help save money for the family farmer. I think we need to provide some securities. That's why I'm very supportive of crop insurance, something that I think is really important to supporting family farmers who are dealing with a lot of unpredictability, whether it be mostly from the market, but also from changing climate. The most western part of my district now has flooding that's at historically high levels, almost on an annual basis now. So things like crop insurance are going to help family farmers provide a little bit more security. That's something I want to be an advocate for.
Before being elected to Congress, Budzinski was the chief of staff to the director of the Office of Management and Budget. You can watch her full Meet the Lawmaker interview on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Who's replacing petroleum and asphalt? You are. Who mapped the soybean genome for better varieties? You did. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
It's not as simple just to wake up one day and go, I want to be a conservation farmer. You're changing how your farming practice is done. You're changing your operation.
Farm Credit supported John and Kelly Watley as they shifted to more sustainable farming, improving the environment where they farm and live. Learn more at farmcredit.com/climate.
Welcome back to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we are going to have a panel discussion discussing all things debt ceiling, appropriations, and Farm Bill. And we're joined by two experts on all of those subjects, joined by Roger Shamrai with OFW Law and Jim Richards with Cornerstone Government Affairs. Appreciate the both of you taking the time to join us. And Jim, I want to go to you first, because obviously the big news this week was House Republicans and their efforts to move Speaker McCarthy's debt ceiling legislation, and saw some drama kind of unfold on that front on Tuesday in particular. Just broadly speaking, what do you make of the fact that the Republican conference, who had some trouble electing a speaker in the first place, was now able to coalesce around a bill like this?
I'm not surprised, to be perfectly honest. And maybe that's part of my biased political bias and where I engage. But similar to the vote for speaker, and full disclosure, I'm close with the speaker and actively involved in efforts to help support him. The speaker's vote was not necessarily surprising on the outcome to me. The same is true of the cap raise debate that we had yesterday and the outcome. Granted, it was a very narrow margin, two votes essentially. There were a couple, three absences on the Democrat side. There was a couple absences on the Republican side. But at the end of the day, the conference rallied around the fact that this is a step forward in the process.
Well, and as this process continues to unfold, of course, negotiations are going to continue with the White House, with Senate Democrats. And so one would think the version that the House passed here is going to be watered down a little bit in some of its policy provisions. So how do you see this unfolding when that, watered down version does eventually come to the House floor? So many members said that they supported this bill and might have a hard time supporting something else.
Yeah. As I just alluded to, it is a step in the process, and until we get to what that final product looks like, it's really hard to prejudge.
Well, and Roger, bringing you into the fold now here, as we look at this debt ceiling debate, this is such a critical debate that will influence many things going forward from a policy standpoint. But I wonder, obviously, you spent quite a bit of time on Capitol Hill working on the appropriations process. I know the debt ceiling debate and the appropriations process are two separate things. But I do wonder, how do you expect this debt ceiling debate, the politics of it, as well as the final result that might ultimately be agreed upon between the Biden White House and House Republicans, how do you think that will influence the appropriations process and the continuing resolution or omnibus that that will be considered here in September?
Well, the reality is we're going to have budget allocations that are going back to the Appropriations Committee and in turn to each of the individual subcommittees. It's pretty clear that the allocations in the House are likely to be lower than they're going to be in the Senate. And in the end, it's going to be a question of how do the various subcommittees make choices with respect to which programs get funded and which don't. I know as we paid attention to the hearings in the House Ag Appropriations Subcommittee with Secretary Vilsack and Commissioner Califf, we heard a number of comments about the budget request not being viewed as realistic from the chairman's perspective, although he did say with respect to the Food and Drug Administration that he could understand why people would be looking for more money for FDA. There have been criticisms of some of the policy decisions with respect to the Commodity Credit Corporation and how that was used. So some of those policy decisions are going to be very important going ahead.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Who increased sales to Egypt 700%? You did. Who's the number one protein in chicken feed? You are. When you pool your resources through your soy checkoff, it all comes back to your bottom line. That's you as your soy checkoff.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
The Senate and House Ag Committees are busy working on the next Farm Bill, which will cover commodities, specialty crops, livestock, and more. This legislation will impact every farmer, rancher, and rural business for the next 5 years. Make sure you don't miss insights and analytics that only AgriPulse and its top-notch team of well-connected experts can provide. Register today for a free trial at agripulse.com and click the subscribe button, or email us at pam@agri-pulse.com. You don't want to miss this Farm Bill coverage.
Welcome back. Roger Shemrai with OFW Law says the upcoming appropriations process is certain to include a number of policy provisions to watch in addition to the government funding levels.
I know there have been some issues raised regarding the rules for the school meal program, which is a proposed rule right now. We don't know if that's going to happen, but if you start getting into putting policy riders limiting proposed rules, you actually risk shutting down the agency's ability to deal with responsible parties who want to see good changes in some of the regulatory activity. So yet to be determined, but always cautious about it.
This week, we did see also a lot of discussion about the work requirement language that was within the debt ceiling proposal offered by House Republicans. That was also, there's been legislation introduced to look at this through the Farm Bill. I say all of this to shift our conversation over to that Farm Bill and ask you, how do you expect the language in this proposal and the underlying GOP sentiment to ultimately affect the work requirement debate in this upcoming Farm Bill?
Honestly, I think that the language that is in this bill is just a precursor for what we're likely to see going forward in terms of the Farm Bill. We've all heard now and we've seen in past Farm Bills that there's always a difference of opinion with respect to what the limitations are on the SNAP program. So that will be a key issue going ahead as the Farm Bill debate gets underway. I know we've seen on the Senate side, Senator Stabenow in particular, saying that she doesn't want to see limitations on the program and that there have been work requirements that are already in place. So there's always a question as to whether or not the new requirements are justified or they're just being overstepping what's already there.
Jim, I want to wrap up the conversation with you and look at the Farm Bill, because as every week passes, we get closer and closer to the Farm Bill quote-unquote expiration. Of course, many of those programs will still be continued. The Congress could still pass an extension of the current language, but the powers that be still say they're very interested in passing a full five-year Farm Bill on time. But understanding that time is getting short to actually do that, to mark up bills in both chambers, go to conference, and go to the president's desk, what do you anticipate would be the political fallout, if any, for House Republicans in the event that a Farm Bill ultimately is not passed in 2023?
Well, I know G.T. Thompson is committed to trying to get a Farm Bill done on time. But if you look past over the last several years, whether it was Frank Lucas, where we had three go-rounds at it, unique challenges then, some of which we're going to face this time. The reality is, can they get it done? Yes. Is there an intention to get it done? Yes. Does Senator Stabenow, who's retiring, want to go out with a win? Absolutely. Does John Bozeman, as the ranking member in the Senate, want to get one done? Absolutely. Minority in the House? Absolutely. Are we looking at a baseline that's almost $500 billion higher than it was in the 2018 Farm Bill? Absolutely. When you throw in the $40 billion plus that was spent in the IRA, the Inflation Reduction Act, on agriculture programs, when you throw in the SNAP increase in the baseline due to what they did in the pandemic, plus the cost of the products due to inflation, it becomes problematic. When you throw in a relatively static Title I commodity support program, it becomes problematic. When you throw in very narrow majorities with different priorities for those said programs, it becomes problematic. But you've got highly capable members that want to get a job done, and are intent on doing it, but numbers do have an impact, and they're going to be reflected in the overall debate, and it's going to be a challenge because of that.
Well, will folks be generally pleased with what things look like here in the next couple of months as debt ceiling talks continue, as the appropriations process continues, and as Farm Bill deliberations continues? No shortage of things to watch in the ag policy realm. Roger, Jim, thanks for joining us to discuss them all.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
We'll be right back with more AgriPulse newsmakers, but first, our Andrew Hunneke takes a look at a title of the Farm Bill sure to receive plenty of attention in the reauthorization process.
Title VII in the Farm Bill is focused on research and extension. Funding for the title has been a major focus for many ag groups heading into Farm Bill reauthorization, mainly because investments in ag research have flatlined since the early 2000s. Public spending on ag research has declined by 30% during that time, and the number of scientists in public food and ag research has also fallen from 8,500 to 6,000. Heading into the next Farm Bill, Congress is being pushed for $8 billion in Farm Bill funding for ag research. In a March letter to Capitol Hill, a wide array of groups said U.S. food security is at stake, and China now spends twice as much as the United States on public ag research. Some of the new programs that were authorized in the 2018 Farm Bill include the Agriculture Advanced Research and Development Authority pilot and Research Centers of Excellence at 1890 institutions. The 2018 Farm Bill also established new competitive research and extension grants for hemp research and indoor and urban agriculture. For AgriPulse, I'm Andrew Hunneke.
Register now for the 2023 AgriPulse Food and Ag Issue Summit in California. The event will offer participants a full day of presentations and panel discussions. You can hear from members of the California Legislature, food and agriculture leaders, along with industry experts and academics. The summit takes place on June 5th at the Sheraton Grand Sacramento and through our virtual experience. View the latest information and register today under the Events tab at agripulse.com.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the upcoming week. Members of the Senate Ag Committee will get together Tuesday and Thursday for a series of hearings focused on getting producer feedback on the Farm Safety Net, risk management programs, and access to credit. And be on the lookout for our Sarah Wyans at the Western Ag Law Conference Thursday and Friday in Reno, Nevada. We'll have the latest farm policy news throughout the week on AgriPulse.com. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit AgriPulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.